Ladies and gentlemen, coming soon, a podcast you've all been waiting for. The movie podcast to end all movie podcasts. A podcast that discusses and critiques the best of the best and the worst of the worst movies playing at a theater near you. With a host whose opinions have been deemed as fact by your favorite fact checkers. And that's a fact. Without further ado, let me introduce you to the movie maestro, the tyrant of theater, the gumshoe of review, the man that makes theater employees and Hollywood execs shiver by his mere presence. Ladies and gentlemen, the judge, the jury, the sultan of cinema, Justin Henson! Welcome to the Movie Wire.
Welcome to this week's edition of The Movie Wire. I'm your host, Justin Henson, and welcome to the show. We have a fantastic show this week with four brand new reviews, two new for theaters, and two now available to stream. Also, we have on the show one of my favorite movies of the year so far. This week on the show, to be a hero, it takes a lot of gut when Bert Kreischer gets kidnapped to Russia to recover a watch he stole over 20 years ago in The Machine. Meet the parents again when old school Italian immigrant meets the parents of his son's all-American fiance in About My Father. Now available on Apple TV Plus, follow the life of beloved actor through his rise to fame to his battle with Parkinson's disease in Still, a Michael J. Fox movie. And finally, now streaming on Paramount Plus comes this mystery thriller from Mexico where seven people are kidnapped and suddenly find themselves part of a deadly game in Death's Roulette. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get right into it. Ready for my verdict? Let's go.
Just out of the windows to watch a roar and a burst of flame.
The Movie Wire Podcast.
There it is.
With just neat people like me.
The Wire.
And here we go.
When Sebastian tells his old-school Italian immigrant father, Salvo, that he is going to propose to his all-American girlfriend, Salvo insists on crashing a weekend with her parents in the new comedy, About My Father.
My parents are inviting us to the summer place for the big 4th of July weekend.
I can't leave my father.
This is the first summer since we have to say goodbye to your dear mother, and you're going to leave me to burn the sparklers and eat the hot dogs alone!
Why don't we just bring him?
Nah, I don't think so.
You hear this, ladies?
He's worried his immigrant father's gonna make him look like some kind of Goomba.
All right, listen, if we're gonna do this, Dad, you gotta dial it down with the...
What is this?
Welcome to White Oak.
Wow, this is amazing.
Hey, my little hands here.
It's called love and affection, Dad. Unlike you, when you met me at the delivery room, you chose to shake my hand.
What else was I supposed to do? We just met.
Only in Sebastian, I don't know how you're going to fit in.
Where's my cheek?
Don't these people have jobs?
They got their money in the stock market, not in mayonnaise jars buried in their backyard.
I just hope nothing gets stolen this weekend because these people love to blame the immigrants.
We'll give you the grand tour. This is Doug.
He's learning to be a healer.
Hello.
What are you doing?
Just serenading our pet peacock. I love you.
These people are strange.
They have birds for pets.
He's like me.
Peacocks are just a bunch of goddamn show-offs, if you ask me.
I was nervous to bring you here, but I didn't know you were going to spend the whole time embarrassing me.
How could you say that to your father?
Here we go again.
Everything I'm doing for you that I've ever done for you is for your own good.
Hey, man, check it out. I could die.
I'm trying to make sure that you don't make an ass out of yourself by trying to be somebody you're not.
Woo! Oh, my God.
Oh, shit. Sebastian, your suit.
It's Versace. Do you like it?
No, you moron. It's not up.
I would love to make a full Italian dinner for everybody.
We don't keep a lot of food here.
The Maniscalco always finds a way to feed his family. Now's the time
that we need. My father has an old Italian saying, family isn't one important thing,
it's everything.
I can't believe you put this all together from what we have in the kitchen.
It's artichoke and poultry.
Salute.
Oh, no.
Fat
fed him their pet peacock.
And you thought I was crazy for worrying that you were going to make us look like some bad Italian stamp?
No time.
That's right.
To help me get rid of the evidence.
Why does it seem like you've done this before?
Starring Robert De Niro and Sebastian Maniscalco as father and son, Salvo and Sebastian. About My Father is written by stand-up comedian Sebastian Maniscalco and Austin Earle from the more recent TV spinoff of the Santa Claus movies, The Santa Clauses. Maniscalco has gotten a chance here to tell us either a funny story, emotional story, or a moral lesson about family here. Or if he uses the proper formula for what this movie was intended to be, all of the above. By using his very own father as the motivation, who actually immigrated from Sicily that moved to the States when he was just 15 years old. And this is where Salvo gives his beautician license to support his wife and kids with cut-and-dye jobs in a suburban salon. Now, just last year, we had a stand-up comedian, Joe Coy, walk us through his family life and inspiration with the dreadful Easter Sunday. And also, I'll be reviewing stand-up comedian Bert Kreischer's attempt in The Machine later in the show. But let's start with Easter Sunday as the comparison here, which had its moments, but always felt like it was held back and tame from not hurting anybody's feelings. And I get that completely, but if you're going to make a movie about family and use your own as inspiration, you have to be ready to give audiences either one, edginess we got from your stand-up, or two, something we weren't expecting. And with both Easter Sunday and About Your Father, they both land below the mark of these. About Your Father lands to the same fate as Easter Sunday, where the movie just tends to drag and we try to piece together what the hell is the point, the plot, and then we think of the wasted potential here. Now, both Joe Coy and Sebastian Maniscalco are fantastic stand-up comedians, but when it comes to their major motion pictures, both of them feel like they're censoring themselves. It feels like they're creating these comedic situations that crescendos to try and get to that punchline, but when we reach the punchline, it completely falls flat, and we're just waiting for a rim shot, but the jokes are not even worth a rim shot. And then the cast just looks back at the drummer waiting for that rim shot, wondering what the hell is going on, and he's just shaking his head in shame. But I will give Maniscalco credit. You can tell the respect and love he has for his father. There is no question of that here, and it would be one thing to make a feature film that focuses around the father and son dynamic without turning it into a situational comedy. I think back to such films as 1989's Dad, or even telling the story through the eyes of Salvo. This would have been a better strategy by utilizing the father of the bride strategy, but Maniscalco is determined to make this a situational comedy attempt with him front and center, and it does not work. I have no idea what the hell this movie was going for. The jokes fall flat, the emotion falls flat, you can see the intent of what it's trying to be, and that's the most frustrating thing in this movie, is that there is no absolute point. This has to be one of the most forgettable comedies that I have ever seen. Now, I have great respect for Robert De Niro, as most of us do when we watch a film with him in it. And if he is at the age of just taking on projects that he has fun with, then more power to him. All the respect to him. He has earned that right to make these types of movies, if he's just having fun with it. But if he is taking on these projects because he thinks this material is good, De Niro needs that one good friend to pull him off to the side and say, "I know Meet the Parents you were funny in, but playing the same character in all comedies since then is beginning to become very tiresome." Now, just having De Niro present in a comedy with his notorious grimace, it's been done, and it was funny at first watch. Meet the Parents had a very simplistic plot with some smart dialogue that had some room for improvisation. But now we are in a situation where he is playing the same character in every single comedic role. Filmmakers are really sucking this Robert De Niro thing dry. This should be the final sign for De Niro to hang up that comedy hat if he's picking these roles because he believes the material is good. But realistically, it is the filmmakers that are just relying on his mere presence to fill seats and drive the comedy. The movie was directed by Laura Tarriso from 2020's Work It, 2018 Good Girls Get High, and 2017's Fits and Starts. Tarriso, we can feel from the production value that she is still finding her footing as director, being freshly out of film school in the last 8 years. Tarriso has some very impressive short films, don't get me wrong, but you can feel the desperation of her directing style during some of these comedic scenes, where she is too by the book, and she has a poor script to work with. She doesn't utilize the cast as stand-up comedian and then De Niro to really have these scenes shine. It is too structured, it is too stiff, that doesn't do anything for the audience engagement. There is little to no innovation to make any attempt at the situational scenes funny nor engaging to watch. When you take all that and match that with bland performances, poor unfunny dialogue, we get a situational comedy attempt that has the bland flavor and consistency consistency of cream of wheat. And by the time we reach the end, it feels like we've been eating the same damn cream of wheat for the last 2 years. After about the halfway mark, I began to wonder how much Sebastian Maniscalco had his hands in the writing. Compared to his stand-up, this does not match his style. It feels like somebody more familiar with generic sitcoms whose main attempt is entertaining for 30 minutes versus a stand-up comedian. Somebody like, I don't know, Austin Earle, who helped write this dumpster fire of a movie. Now, of course, I wasn't there during the writing process, but I can only point out what I felt during the film. And I can feel where Maniscalco had his hands in the movie, because when we talk about Salvo, the love and care for the character is present. And I think this is where Maniscalco had his hands in the writing, but when it comes to the comedy, this is where we really feel Austin Earle's hands at play. Which is a disappointment, because if I'm going and spending money on a comedy with a writing credit from an actual stand-up comedian who also stars in it, I would have hoped for it to be, you know, funny. But I didn't laugh once during this disaster of a film. About My Father is a forgettable, unfunny, emotionless attempt at yet again to capitalize on the grumpy looks of De Niro in a situational comedy that ends up being the blandest comedy film to date, with Robert De Niro to star. And it definitely won't make me feel the need to tune into Sebastian Maniscalco's stand-up if that was his vision of this movie. About My Father will make viewers, after leaving, shrug their shoulders and ask themselves, what in the goddamn hell was the point of this movie? I'm giving About My Father 1 star.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Now, before we get into the rest of the show, make sure you check out my reviews on previous episodes for movies that just became available to rent, buy, and stream now. Now available, our naughty 50 Shades of Grey ladies are back and take their club to Italy in Book Club The Next Chapter, which was a page-turner receiving 3 stars. Control is an illusion in the new Ben Affleck thriller Hypnotic, which didn't keep me mesmerized, receiving 2.5 stars. A Fool for Love becomes an accidental celebrity only to lose it all in one of the worst movies of the year so far, in Fool's Paradise, which received 1 star. The story of the Mario Brothers as they take on King Koopa in the Super Mario Brothers movie, which couldn't quite reach star power, receiving 2.5 stars. John Wick returns to defeat the High Table in John Wick 4, which fought its way to 3 stars. Who needs heroes when you have thieves in Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, which journeyed its way to 3 stars. And finally, It Sucks to Be Him in the story of Dracula's assistant in Renfield, which didn't suck at all, receiving 3 stars. You can find those reviews on my previous episodes, and just a reminder, if you haven't yet, make sure you hit follow or subscribe, and don't forget to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And make sure you follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd at MovieWireShow. Now it's that time of year again in the Seattle area where we have the Snohomish Film Festival. You can now submit your film no matter where you're at by going to www.filmfreeway.com/Snohomish Film Festival. We've had a lot of great talent so far this year. Don't wait to the last minute. Submit your film today. I cannot wait to see your movie. Now, before we jump into the last batch of reviews, I want to talk about a podcast that has become one of my best stress reliefs when it comes to the workplace. Whenever I need a funny, entertaining pick-me-up, I always rely on these two to make it happen. And that's Jay and Kay over at the Fuck My Workplace podcast. Let's hear from Jay and Kay now.
Working can be such a drag, but it's a necessary evil.
What better way to combat the woes of the working world than to commiserate with your fellow man?
I'm Jay.
And I'm Kay.
And we're the hosts of Fuck My Work Life, a comedy podcast where we share people's stories from the workplace.
Whether they're funny, weird, scary, or just plain messed up, they're always entertaining and may leave you thinking you don't have it so bad after all.
Available on all major podcast platforms. Give us a listen. Your sanity may just depend on it.
The beloved actor and advocate Michael J. Fox exploring his personal professional triumphs and trivials, and what happens when an incurable optimist confronts his incurable disease, and still a Michael J. Fox movie.
The Story of Me, take 2.
3, 2, here we go, ready, and action.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
What did it mean to be still?
I wouldn't know, I was never still.
That's him. That's our star.
I want this job. I can do it. Whatever the exception is, I can fix it. I can be older. I can be taller.
I can be anything.
The popularity of Michael J. Fox is a phenomenon.
Here is Michael J. Fox.
What is the secret of your success?
And the winner is
Michael J. Fox.
I don't believe this. This is great.
I feel 4 feet tall.
I get it. I was big. I was bigger than bubblegum. I woke up and I noticed my pinky. Auto-animated. Parkinson's disease. I told Tracy the news. In sickness and in health, I remember her whispering. No one outside of my family knew. There was only one reason I took these pills. To hide. But all those years of hiding was shaking me awake. Denied that part of me that wants to continue to go on and do things is to quit.
I won't accept that.
So this is who I am. I'm a tough son of a bitch.
Still, a Michael J. Fox movie.
The sad sack story is Michael J. Fox gets this debilitating disease and it crushes him.
Yeah, that's boring.
Now, it was 1 a.m. as I just finished watching another movie for the show, and I decided to browse streaming services to plan out my next watches. When I came across Still, a Michael J. Fox movie, I decided just to turn it on for about 10 minutes just before bed to get a feel for it. And then the next time I looked at my clock, it was 2:40 a.m. Right from the first 10 minutes of the movie, Still just sucks the viewer in and it never lets go. Still takes you not only on a personal journey of Michael J. Fox from his film career to his battle with Parkinson's, but it also cleverly takes you on a nostalgic journey with a mix of storytelling, nostalgic movie cutscenes, and Michael telling his raw but honest thoughts about his journey. It's an emotional ride that doesn't use sadness in its storytelling to ignite an emotional response to captivate, but rather uses Michael J. Fox's humor, reflection, determination, along with a comparison of the past of accomplishments, to not just live in the past, but to teach a lesson to use our past to drive us in the face of struggle, to use it as a reminder of continuous growth. Now, Still was directed by Academy Award winner Davis Guggenheim from 2007's An Inconvenient Truth. And here's what I love about what Guggenheim does here. He takes Michael J. Fox's story and adds carefully chosen cutscenes of Michael's previous movies to use examples of not only physically shown emotion in reaction to the topic of conversation, but also comparisons of the then and now to Fox. This is a brilliant way to connect to the audience to gain attention and place Michael's emotions to an example that the viewer can physically see, knowing that at times during the documentary, Michael does have trouble with showing facial expressions due to his disease, and even at times has trouble with quick responses that even Guggenheim calls out in a raw conversation with Michael, saying, "You're having trouble thinking of a one-liner right now, aren't you?" And Michael J. Fox goes on to describe why, and he gives us little knowledge of why this is happening and why he's having trouble. He just doesn't leave it at that. They go on to teach points about the disease, and this is where Still is wildly successful, is the fact that this doesn't cover Michael's life and career. Michael and Guggenheim covers an understanding of what Parkinson's disease is, and he splits up different symptoms and struggles throughout the film, where we just don't get an information dump. Fox and Guggenheim covers a section of Fox's life, then covers a well-balanced topic of Parkinson's, and then ties into the topic of conversation at hand. This is where Still just flows without feeling drawn out, where it's not just shot-by-shot visual examples with interviews and information dumps. The video always matches the audio, and it's one of the most well-balanced documentaries I have seen in a long, long time. This has the skill of teaching the viewers something without even knowing that it's teaching us. Michael is like that cool teacher you had in school that was so fun that you didn't even know he was teaching you anything, but then you ended up he was teaching you the most. What I really appreciated was the raw feel and honesty from Michael J. Fox in this. He makes his intent of honesty and clarity right from the opening scene, where we see a zoom of the bedroom with beer bottles, and Fox narrating the fact of how drunk he got the prior night, and waking up the next morning. He never shines away away from calling out his addiction problems when he lets success get into his head and even becoming a diva or jerk to his fellow cast members. Fox's reflection on his flaws in his life and determination to still grow is a big focus for Fox, and Guggenheim shows this through the way he shows his interactions with his family and his kids, and more specifically, the causes to teach out Parkinson's disease. Now, as I stated earlier, there are a lot of cutscenes from prior movies to help mimic the emotional response or even prove a point on the topic at hand. When we get into the second half of the movie, we do feel a little cutscene overload, where it seems to show more cutscenes than we do screen time with Michael, and this is where it does feel a little carried away, especially when we don't get any lengthy narratives that make sense during that time, as we did in the first half of the movie. So in the second half of the movie, the strength lies into how close we feel to Fox. The documentary crescendos gradually with getting not just to know the career of Michael, but Michael's strength, weaknesses, his view on life through his subtle and at times sarcastic humor, all the way up to where he stops and states he needs to stop and take a break. He needs to take his pills. He's been in pain. In which Guggenheim states, "We have been doing this interview for hours. Why didn't you tell me?" And Michael just says, "It's okay." Even though there's some sad points and topics like this, and still, you aren't going to hear it from Fox, but rather hope, gratefulness, and a positive outlook of life, knowing that there are others like him with Parkinson's, and he is one of the most recognizable faces to be a symbol of hope and strength to those battling Parkinson's. Not because he feels the need to, necessarily, but the want to, and loves to be in the face of something greater than himself. Still, a Michael J. Fox movie is an achievement on so many levels. There isn't a lot of documentaries out there that left me wanting more. What Guggenheim and Fox do is create a film to inform, inspire, reflect, and at the same time remind us of the great career of Michael J. Fox. But more and more importantly, show us what the true meaning of inner strength and growth can be driven by everything in life, that you have love from your past to your present, and not worry so much about the future on things that you can't control. Famous or not, life doesn't pick favorites. I'm giving Still a Michael J. Fox movie 3.5 stars. Bert's drunken past catches up with him 20 years down the road when he and his father are kidnapped by those Bert wronged 20 years ago while drunk on a college semester abroad in Russia in the new comedy, The Machine.
7 years ago, one incredible story blew up the internet.
When I was 22, I got involved with the Russian mafia. I was a frat boy on a class trip.
This is Igor. He's here for your protection. He is very dangerous. Whoa. You are not to talk to or hang out with him.
All I want to do is hang out with him.
I did not speak Russian.
Yeah, machina.
All I knew how to say was,
"On the machine!"
It was literally the best summer of my life.
We robbing this guy?
This is Russia!
23 years after those events, the story continues.
What is wrong with this shirt?
Yo, machine.
Not today, brother. Not today. My dad showed up.
You paid money to see my son tell his made-up story about robbing a train in Russia?
For the millionth time. It's a true story.
It took about 2 seconds before he started making me mental. Look at him.
Hey, Pooh Bear.
He's a monster.
Are you the machine?
Ma'am, the party's outside.
23 years ago, you stole the only thing my father ever cared about.
Sorry.
This is some sort of TikTok prank. I'm about to lose my shit.
It's definitely a prank. Clearly, that's a fake gun.
Or not.
You're coming with me back to Russia.
Russia? Oh!
If you try to run.
He's going down. Dad, why are you talking all fast like you're on speed or something?
Because I'm on speed. Oh. More drugs.
Bert. Take off that shirt and show those SOBs who you really are.
Now, you gotta party with me.
He's the motherfucking machine!
Fine, I'm just gonna shoot him in the leg. Oh my God, I'm going to fucking hell! I killed a man!
Well, technically you killed several men.
Bert Kreischer, you probably would be able to tell by his shirtless stand-up, has had quite an interesting career and life. When watching his stand-up, watching the unapologetic Bert tell jokes, one would not know that his career has been so interesting that Oliver Stone once attempted to make a movie surrounding Kreischer's life in the 90s. And that would have been a pretty interesting take versus what we got with this film. Eventually, that project fizzled out. The writer that was penning that script sold his treatment to National Lampoon's, and that film became Van Wilder. Now, that type of film makes a lot more sense than what we probably would have gotten from Oliver Stone. But from Oliver Stone to National Lampoon's, and now we have The Machine. Now, I have attended The Machine twice now. My first viewing was at a 1 p.m. showing with a pretty decent crowd, but walking out of the movie, I felt there was something missing. So I bought tickets at a night showing at 9:30 p.m. that night, treating a friend of mine to be a designated driver. Around 8:30 p.m., we visited a local bar that was close to the theater. As I finished my first drink, I thought about The Machine from an earlier showing, and I thought just how stupid it was. Then I finished my second drink and something came over me that I was actually looking forward to seeing this movie for a second time. No, I won't go into how many drinks I had, and in no way do I encourage everyone that sees this film to drink before the movie. As we pay our tab, we head to the theater, we walk through the doors, and to my surprise, this was a much, much busier showing than my previous showing. And as we sat down, I noticed how energetic the audience was. I think some people had the same idea as me, as head to the bar, have a couple drinks, and enjoy. And we even saw audience members that were at the local bar that we attended watching the showing. When we reach the halfway mark to this film and we get to a scene where we have our main character, Bert, aka The Machine, attempting to throw up in his hand and attempt to hide it in his pocket. This was the exact moment I realized my experiment was a success. I was having fun, and there was a similarity between both my early showing and my late showing audience, is that you could hear the fun and the laughter. And even more so, when the credits started rolling, you can hear the audience members in both showings reciting jokes from the movie. This film was designed to be stupid fun and a crowd pleaser. Now, this is stand-up comedian Bert Kreischer's first feature film, and we finally get a movie that surrounds the comedian's material, and not only understands the comedian, but understands the viewers that are going to watch The Machine. It never tries to be something that it's not, even when the film feels unbalanced. And I will get into that in just one second. Writers Kevin Beagle from Scrubs, Cougar Town, and Workaholics, and 2019's Ma writer Scotty Landis understands Bert's comedy style, and shows a level of respect to keep it fluent for Bert's proper execution of his character. We also have the smart choice of Peter Intensio as director, who at least has some sort of entertainment funny bone in his body by directing Key and Peele, The Last Man on Earth, and 2016's Keanu. Now, compared to another movie that I just reviewed on this episode, About My Father, which was also a feature for a stand-up comedian with writing that did not respect the comedian nor the viewers that watch it. And this is a movie here that gets it. Now, before I give this movie any more praise, let me be very, very clear here. This is not a comedic masterpiece, and to be honest, the movie is extremely, extremely dumb. And I mean dumb. This is so dumb, I was having trouble remembering what 2 plus 2 was when walking out of the movie theater. But it is more entertaining than it has any right to be. This is the exact movie that I would flip on at 3 in the morning to turn off my brain to just have something entertaining on TV. It has the engagement of like watching an infomercial in the middle of the night. You know it's mindless drivel, but you can't get yourself to turn the channel. The next thing you know, you've been watching the same damn infomercial about the bulletproof blender that also acts as a vacuum and comes with a free garden hose if you act now for over 2 hours. But here is where the film runs into trouble. The beginning and even the end, along with the runtime, The Machine kicks us off as self-promotional by showing us the rise of fame of Bert, then gets into the ridiculous plot driver, where the Russian mob hears Bert stand up and his telling of the famous story about him actually robbing a Russian train from the years abroad in Russia, then becoming part of the mob. This story Bert has told numerous times in real life during his stand-up, so the extent of what's embellished or what's factual, I will leave that up to you. But for the sake of the plot of The Machine, the Russian mob kidnaps Bert along with his father, Albert, played by Mark Hamill, and then takes them both to Russia to gain back what was taken that many years ago. But before we get into the kidnapping, we focus on Bert's troubled relationship with his family from his past party-obsessed mistakes, where we have Bert in therapy telling the story of his troubled relationship with his family, and the very quick thrown-in plot detail that really just is there to introduce Mark Hamill, which is Bert's troubled relationship with his father. And these scenes portray Bert as extremely unlikable, and puts him in situations in the first act that spiked my anxiety because they come across extremely awkward and loud. The cast just seems to be shouting the magnitude of their lines. It was almost a relief to me when the Russians end up kidnapping Bert, just to shut him up. Right when the movie takes us to Russia is where the film starts to balance out loudest performances, and Burke gets a little bit leveled. Kreischer, you can tell, treats the first act as him doing his stand-up bit, and it just doesn't work here. But when he is put in situations other than the material for his stand-up, he is actually pretty engaging to watch. But the film does have to work to recover from the dreadful first act, but it eventually does to an extent of it. Now, the best part of the movie is in the middle during the second and third acts, where we have the build of chemistry between Mark Hamill, Kreischer, and their kidnapper, Russian mobster Irina, played by Ava Babic, who adds a convenient relatability between our characters by having some family issues as well. The dynamic and intended idiotic dialogue takes us on a ride that requires no thought nor any attempt at logic. If you even try to take some common sense from this movie or have something make sense, you will probably hate this movie, and it's not for you. With the almost 2-hour runtime, which is not what I was expecting for a movie like this, I was actually taken by surprise on how fast-paced it travels with little to no downtime in the story until we get to the climax. This is where it goes back to the trouble we had in the first act, but this time the entire cast on screen attempts to be way too over the top and has hints of negative energy that attempts to give the audience some funny moments, but the jokes just fall flat and leaves the audience with just hearing crickets. The final 15 minutes really bogs the fun factor down and leaves the viewer on the wrong note. The Machine is a purposely dumb, ridiculous comedy that definitely will not be for everyone. Those that are fans of Burt Kreischer will not be disappointed nor surprised in the type of humor. For everybody else, the humor may be a mixed bag, but if you are in a crowd full of people and you have a few drinks in you, I'm sure you can find something fun in The Machine. But if you take those things away, you may feel a little empty after viewing. I'm giving The Machine 2 stars if you're sober and 3 stars if you're drunk. So let's just call it 2.5. It gets so hard to keep track and even have time to read all the trending topics on the web. Now there's a new app to help with all of those problems. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable. Browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. You can follow any topic as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin. You can even follow Kardashian. It will find you the latest articles and read them to you out loud. And guess what? They have podcasts as well. Explore trending podcasts from over 50 countries. The Movie Wire is now a featured podcast on the Newsly app. Download and use Newsly for free now. The link will be in the description of this episode. You can also use one of my promo codes that you will find in the description as well to get you a 1-month free premium subscription. Stop scrolling, start listening, download Newsly today. 7 people are kidnapped and suddenly find themselves part of a deadly game in the Paramount Plus original Death's Roulette.
He made them play a morbid game. Do you know where they kidnapped you?
It was in Mexico. They also knocked us out. And we woke up here.
They're gonna kill us, aren't they? They're gonna kill us all.
Calm down, my love. Everything will be fine. They just want money.
No. They don't want money. They just want to make us suffer. They tortured me for hours.
We're running out of time.
My God. So what the hell are we gonna do, huh?
Shut up, you goddamn liar! Shut up!
Are you two going to agree to die?
New to Paramount Plus and streaming right now comes a story of 7 people that wake up in a mansion with a jigsaw-like psychopath that forces them to play a deadly game to discover not only their relationship to one another, but to find out who this killer is and how to survive. And of course, this is a recycled vehicle from Saw, Exam, 9 Dead, Cube, and countless others. It's usually a cheap thrill ride with the same premise, just different settings. And the one thing they all have in common is the fact they never really try and outdo one another when it comes to adding anything new. Filmmakers know the formula. They have a solid set of characters with at least one likable, one jerk, and have a bloodbath between the second and third act, only to know that they have to really bank on the clever twist at the end. And in a lot of the audience and viewers' eyes, they know this formula. They come for the shock factor and the twist factor. Nothing more, nothing less. Death's Roulette has a normal cliche cast of characters, with our most likable hero-type character, who is an ex-cop played by Manolo Cardona, who also directs the film, and our jerk Armando, played by Dagoberto Gama. Now, Death's Roulette does go for something just a little different here, where it attempts to steer away from the normal plotline ever so slightly and attempt less gruesome kills, but a little bit more discovery and mystery between the characters, with eye-catching visual appeal to distract from the eye-catching lack of gore. Death's Roulette, I will give a little bit of credit from steering away from gore every 5 minutes and the normal cliches that we see. Now, we do get cliches in this film, don't get me wrong, but it is a little less apparent. It's a valid attempt, but even with how good and stylish the movie looks, it always feels like it's missing something. And by the time we get into the twist, with even the added dialogue, it's not complex enough to add any clues for a chance for the viewer to try to figure out the mystery. It doesn't feel like it's earned the uniqueness of where the movie ending result is. Now, the film has a lot of big ideas with a very basic screenplay and basic character motivations. Each of the characters, even though come from different backgrounds, all seem to blend together, and the film banks on physical differences to really separate them instead of using well-crafted characters with substance. This is a film that suffers from overconfidence, that think it has the budget, it has the material to do so, but in reality, I can picture director Cardona slowing down each scene, placing slower moving camera shots and slow burning pauses to buy time to make a respectable runtime, because the dialogue comes across like asking closed-ended questions. It's brief to the point with no substance. And by the time we get towards the climax, the film decides that it has had enough of this game. It flips over the Monopoly board, metaphorically, and decides to abandon ship and lead to the climax that doesn't match the only thing that was holding the film afloat, which is the setting and visuals. There is so much missed opportunity in taking advantage of the beautifully designed mansion, and as a viewer, I was filling in the blanks that this could happen or that could happen, and the ending result is that really nothing happens. It's just there to look pretty with no utilization of the environment. So here we have a movie written by Gavo Emil and Julieta Steinberg, with an idea by Frank Ariza, which I couldn't picture a lot of effort into this idea, which I don't understand the idea premise of this. This idea has already been done, it's just a different setting. Did he just march into the studio and say, "Hey guys, you know the Saw films? Instead of making it gritty, let's put a beautiful mansion and tease the audience that we are going to do something special with it, but do absolutely nothing with it." The film's intent is to be different and acts like a game with the audience. And by the end of the film, we can almost hear the faint laughter of the filmmakers giggling, saying, "I can't believe the audience bought into this crap and sat through the entire film." The actual concept of this idea is what really drives this film into unique territory. The actual lack of execution and sloppy writing or making anything memorable is the absolutely scary piece of it, and the only scary piece of it. The performances are great, and some will buy into the simplicity of the story and screenplay. Those looking for a gore-fest thrill ride and jaw-dropping climax, you will be greatly disappointed. Now, when it comes to the climax for me, the writers, in my opinion, take a cheap shot and throw in something that any normal human being would shudder over. It's not the filmmakers that do it, it's not the complexity of it, it's not the creativity of it, it's a completely lazy cheap shot for a final stab at redemption. It's the idea of it that makes it seem like a twist, but it's absolutely disgusting. It's not gory, it's not earned. The writers put it in without any rhyme or reason, it literally just feels thrown in. Death Roulette is an okay nighttime movie if you want to burn 90 minutes before bedtime. It looks cool, it sometimes entertains, but don't expect to remember it the next day, as it will be lost in the mix of other movies just like it. And to be open and honest, I had to Google this movie's title, and I just watched it the night before writing this review. I'm giving Death Roulette 2 stars. And that's a cut on this week's edition of The Movie Wire. I want to thank you for listening and thank you for your support. You can also show support by following me on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd at Movie Wire Show. And don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Until next week, do me a favor. Make sure you stay for after the credits to show the respect to those that put their blood, sweat, and tears into making a feature film, and support your local movie theaters.
A verdict has been made on this episode of The Movie Wire by your host, Justin Henson. He thanks you for listening to the show. You can follow Justin on Instagram and Twitter at Movie Wire Show, or visit his website, www.themoviewire.com. Oh, and don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. Until next time, we will see you at the movies.
Thank you for bringing me to the movies.